with me as well. We're going to be spending some time today focusing on one issue, but we are well aware that now that Congress is back in session, lots of issues are coming first and foremost to our attention. One that we're going to be talking about today is hate crime legislation. We also are aware that environmental legislation is going to be moving through this week. We did cover some of that last week, and we'll probably come back to it today. But one of the issues that deserves a great deal of our attention and a place where we're encouraging you to take some action today as you go to our website is this issue of hate crimes legislation. And I think our two guests will help us understand why this is so significant.
Well, they will. And we are so pleased to have with us our first guest today, Robert Knight. He is the senior writer for Coral Ridge Ministries, also the senior fellow at the American Civil Rights Union. Of course, no stranger to Point of View listeners, Bob was a draftsman of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, the law that attempted to define marriage as a union of one man and one woman for all federal purposes and allow states to resist demands to recognize same-sex marriage performed in other states. He has served as director of the Culture and Media Institute, a program of the Media Research Center. He's also served as director of the Culture and Family Institute, an affiliate of Concerned Women for America. Bob Knight is the author of The Age of Consent, The Rise of Relativism and the Corruption of Popular Culture. And, Bob, we're just so glad to have you with us here today on Point of View.
Well, it's great to be on, Carmen and Kirby.
Well, you know, President Obama has been saying that to expand hate crime statutes is going to be one of his priorities. As a matter of fact, it's in his legislative agenda on the civil rights portion of his website. He's been very open from the beginning that this is something he would work towards. It looks like that time is getting closer.
Well, within 2 days of his inauguration, the website suddenly sprouted a whole list of things he wanted to do to please the homosexual activists, from a hate crimes law to overturning the Defense of Marriage Act, which I would take personally.
Yes.
I worked on that. And lifting the ban on gays in the military, putting a gay jobs bill into force, you name it. But this week coming up is the hate crimes bill. It's coming at us very quickly. H.R. 1913, sponsored by John Conyers of Michigan, is the classic hate crimes bill that was introduced last year and a couple of years before and has not made it through. It'll be in the House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday, April 22nd, and then they expect it to go to the full House for a vote next week. It's a very dangerous bill. It adds sexual orientation and equates it with skin color or ethnicity, which are legitimate civil rights categories, and it paves the way for the establishment of thought crime and unequal protection of under the law. Now, right now, if you're a victim of crime, you get equal protection. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're coming out of a gay bar or you're a grandmother at an ATM machine. The law regards it as a heinous offense if you're assaulted or hurt. But under this law, the assault against the gay guy coming out of the bar would be considered more harmful and would elicit more protection from law enforcement authorities. The bill also allows the Attorney General to intercede in any criminal case they want that they've determined doesn't meet the federal need to eliminate bias, which gives the federal government carte blanche to interfere in any criminal case all over the U.S. It provides $10 million for hate crime prosecutions over the next few years, and you just have to apply if you're a local official. So that gives you an incentive to say that certain crimes are hate crimes and others are not. You know, if you're a victim of crime and you're not in a preferred category, you just may not get the same protection.
Robert Knight with us as we are talking about this issue of hate crime legislation. Robert, let me, if I can, as we go along here, raise some of the concerns that people have about why we would even address this. And one is kind of just a procedural issue. The Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act, oftentimes known as the Matthew Shepard Act, it's been introduced in every session of Congress since 1997. Why do we have a concern about it now?
Well, we have a concern because it just might pass. With the makeup of Congress, it's far more liberal now. We've got a president in office who said he will sign it the minute it hits his desk. So it's a very real threat. And I think a lot of people don't understand the kind of threat it poses. And the best way is to tell them what happened in Pennsylvania. A very similar state-based hate crimes law went into effect. And the very first use of it was against 11 Christians who were demonstrating peacefully at a homosexual street festival. This was in October 2004. They were arrested, even though they were pushed around by the gay activists, and 11 of them were held overnight in jail, and then five of them were charged with hate crime-based felony charges that could have added up to 45 years in prison. They had this hanging over them for months until a judge finally saw a video and said, wait a minute, these people haven't committed any hate crime. But the prosecutor knew that and didn't care. In fact, he even declared that the Bible was a form of hate speech. So you can see where, how these laws can be abused. And the proponents of this law say, well, don't worry, we stuck a paragraph in at the very end that says nothing in this bill will be construed to say that acts or speech protected by the Constitution will be abridged. But, boy, that's a thin shield in the hands of liberal judges and even legislators who could either take it out later or amend it or just override it somehow.
And plus, we're also already seeing where the hate crime laws are being used to silence people who speak against homosexuality, not only here in the United States, but in other countries, that is sort of setting a precedent for us if we really watch and see what's taking place.
Yeah, they always begin with the promise that it's just about stopping violent crime. And this bill mentions acts of violence. And then it says, you know, it'll add penalties on top of the acts of violence if it can be proven the acts of violence are committed because of hatred toward a particular group. And if you're not in that group, again, you're out of luck. But that's how it starts. And then in Canada, we saw it advanced because once they got the hate crimes concept into law, the idea that you can have a thought crime in addition to a criminal act, they quickly moved to add speech to the formula. They passed another law that said, the government can move against anybody who's creating a climate of hostility toward a particularly protected minority group. And sexual orientation is in the list. And so you can't say anything in Canada publicly against homosexuality. Pastors have even been hauled before human rights tribunals and prosecuted because they wrote a letter to the editor or made a public pronouncement that the Bible says homosexuality is wrong. That's where we could be headed.
Robert Knight with us. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about hate crimes legislation. He's a senior writer with the Coral Ridge Ministries, also senior fellow with the ACRU. And if you would like to express your opinion about this to your elected member of Congress, this would be in the House of Representatives, visit our website, pointofview.net. You will see a section there that says Protect Religious Freedom, Oppose Hate Crimes Legislation. You click on that button, and then as you work your way through, we give you some information, and then we have a suggested email that you can send to your representative. Now, there are two things. Number one, you can put in your zip code so that you find out who your member of Congress is. Number two, we give you the opportunity if you want to add or delete or make different changes to it, and then that is automatically sent off to your representative. We make it very easy for you to contact your member of Congress. We even give you a suggested writing if you want, or you can write your own, and we even tell you who your congressman is. It's pretty simple. So if you want to contact Congress, visit our website, pointofview.net. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Carmen Pate, I'm Kirby Anderson. Robert Knight with us, senior writer with Coral Ridge Ministries, also senior fellow with the American Civil Rights Union, ACRU. If you'd like to join us a little bit later, we will open up the phones, but let me again encourage you to take some action. We give you an action point every once in a while. This is one of those. If you would want to express your opinion about the issue of hate crime legislation, which will be considered tomorrow in Congress, you are encouraged to visit our website, pointofview.net. In the upper right-hand corner, you will find an opportunity for you to click through there to put in your zip code so you can find your member of Congress and then write a letter to them. Robert, I want to keep asking you some of the questions that surface sometimes with people when we talk about this. And one came up on Friday with Kelly Shackelford, who I guess you probably know. And Kelly Shackelford was saying, for those of you out there that don't believe there's a connection between hate crime legislation and the gay agenda, say same-sex marriage, he was making the legal case that oftentimes judges will use the existence of anti-discrimination kinds of cases and hate crime legislation to justify legalizing same-sex marriage. Was he on target with that particular analysis?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen it all over the country. We saw it in Massachusetts, where the state judges there cited the Lawrence v. Texas case, in which Anthony Kennedy wrote an opinion overturning Texas's sodomy law, even though it was passed by their legislature. And they reasoned that homosexuality could no longer be considered a class that doesn't deserve heightened protection in the law. And the court went ahead and went beyond that and then struck down the marriage law. I mean, they don't have to be logical. They just use this stuff. And every time that you see the term sexual orientation, you have to realize that is a direct challenge to the gospel of Jesus Christ, because the gospel says we're all sinners in need of God's mercy and salvation, and we have to repent of our sin and turn to God. Sexual orientation is a bold modern statement that says, no, you're born a certain way, your desires validate themselves, you have no need to change, and anyone who says you do is a hateful bigot. That's the whole point of this hate crimes law. It has nothing to do with law enforcement, because there's no evidence that cases that show that people have been attacked for being gay or whatever else aren't being prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
They can't come up with any evidence from the Justice Department or the FBI that these cases aren't being treated seriously. So if there is no epidemic of hate violence and the cases are being treated as seriously as any other case, why the drive to put sexual orientation in the law? It's to create a foundation for a brand new civil right that will, in practice, cause traditional morality to be considered a form of hatred and bigotry to be acted against.
You know, Robert, Andrea Lafferty with the Traditional Values Coalition, she pointed out that Congress has failed to define the term sexual orientation. And that's critical because, according to the American Psychiatric Association, there are 30 sexual orientations. And I think if people are not looking at the broad, through a broad lens on this, they won't realize the devastating impact this could have.
Yeah, and it's not consistent either. In fact, there are some ex-gays, people who have overcome homosexuality, who will be lobbying Congress, saying that, you know, under this legislation, the way it's worded, I have less protection now that I've gone straight than I did when I was gay, and that's not fair. That's un-American. It violates equal protection guarantees from the 14th Amendment. I think they have a strong case, and it shows the elastic definition of sexual orientation. It really means whatever you want it to mean. And that's dangerous to put something that infinitely expansive into the law.
Let me pick up on that because, again, the American Psychiatric Association publishes a DSM. Anybody that's been involved in counseling understands that. It's a Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Okay, if you go and read that, it lists 30 different sexual orientations, which includes some of the things that we could talk about here on the air. And, Carmen, you can attest to this list. There are a few things we would not want to talk about on the air, especially because we try to make this program family-friendly. If they don't give any more definition than that, we're talking about some really bizarre behavior, which is actually in the DSM for the American Psychiatric Association.
Yeah, that's true. I remember putting that list in a paper I did for Concerned Women for America called The Case for Marriage. And also a couple of sexual orientation and American and the American law. I urge people to look them up because
it's not exactly a G-rated list, is it?
Right, Kirby. It's not easy reading. I had no idea there were so many weird behaviors out there, but they you know, you could make a case. That's who I am. It's what I do. So therefore, it's protected. That sexual orientation term is very dangerous. And I will tell you that the very first group that gets attacked when that's found its way into the law is the Boy Scouts of America. In New Jersey, they added a sexual orientation law. So the leftists in New Jersey went after the Boy Scouts, ended up in a Supreme Court case. The Scouts won. But since then, the activists have pursued them all over the country, kicking them out of parks, kicking them out of schools, defunding them from United Way chapters. It's as if they never won their court case to have their own moral standards. And so, you know, whenever you see that term sexual orientation, you know they're what they're really up to is imposing their values on everybody else.
You know, Harry Jackson, he has an article we've posted in The Fray, The Battle for Marriage, and he says that the battle, behind the so-called gay rights movement is a desire to silence biblically faithful Christians. And he talks in this article about how it seems the media has kind of joined in that attempt. And there was an 11-year-old young man who committed suicide, and it's a heartbreaking story, and I can just imagine the devastation of this young man's family. But apparently he had been targeted by students, calling him gay, and really he felt, I guess, threatened by them. And his mom had contacted the school at one point about that. The school should have intervened at some point.
Absolutely.
But apparently, oh, yes, it certainly is. So it seems that Anderson Cooper decided to bring the story to television, and that's all fine. But the problem that Harry Jackson pointed out is that the whole story turned to Christian bashing. They brought in Mel White of Soul Force, which is a radical gay activist group that has had sit-ins and protests of Bible schools and mega churches, et cetera. So the whole story went from what was truly a sad story and something that should have been prevented, but the whole story media-wise turned to the right-wing extremists, the Christians who are creating this kind of atmosphere for kids. And I think he hits on a point. It's that though we can say it's about protecting, it really is about silencing those who believe in biblical traditional values.
Oh, absolutely, and it's culture wide. You know, the law is bad enough, but they're doing it on a number of levels. And I guess the best evidence we have right now in front of us is the Miss USA pageant. I don't know if you've talked about that yet. But
no, we were going to. We were actually joking about before the program that this may be the first time we've ever talked about the Miss USA pageant on Point of View. Certainly the first time we've ever talked about it with Bob Knight. But tell everybody the story if they don't know the testimony given by Miss California USA.
Well, one of the judges is a rabid gay activist, a guy who calls himself Perez Hilton, which is a play on Paris Hilton. He has a blog that's very incendiary. And he asked Miss California, who was competing for the title itself, she was in the running and they thought she was a shoo-in, actually, what do you think of gay marriage? Vermont just legalized it. And she first equivocated a little bit and said, well, I'm glad I live in America where people have a free choice, but I will tell you, my family and what I believe is marriage is a union of a man and a woman. And a few people booed and a lot of them cheered. And then the judge, Perez Hilton, turned very sour. And apparently he voted against her and cost her the crown. And then he went on his own blog and, in a vitriolic rant, swore about her, called her dumb, used the B word, said that she'd been divisive in bringing her religious views out there when she had no business doing that. She never mentioned religion. All she did was answer his question. He went on MSNBC and called her the C word. This guy's out of control. And if you get a chance to see his blog, and I don't know that I'd recommend
going
to his blog for most people.
Pretty awful.
You can see the face of arrogance, saying that I can define anything I want. I can accuse this good, honest young woman of hatred and bigotry. I can cost her crown. I can gloat about it. This is the voice and face of homosexual activist triumphalism. That we're all going to face as a nation as they put into place these laws that are transforming traditional morality into a form of bigotry. You know, she gave an answer that most Americans would agree with. Yeah, I happen to think marriage is the union of a man and a woman. For that,
sure.
She got totally trashed.
Incredible. We need to take a break, and that's the story of the blogger versus the beauty. And when we come back, we'll take some of your phone calls, 1-800-351-1212, and we're focusing our time and attention today on the issue of hate crimes legislation. If you would like to know a little bit more about that, we have posted a number of articles. Might also mention my book, A Biblical Point of View on Homosexuality. If you want to express your opinion to your member of Congress, don't forget to visit our website, pointofview.net. Oppose hate crime legislation. We'll take a break and come back with more right after this.
You are listening to Points of View. For materials offered during the program, please write to Point of View, Post Office Box 30. That's Box 30, Dallas, Texas, 75221, zip 75221. Or call our toll-free number, 1-800-347-5151. That's 1-800-347-5151. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. Point of View will continue after this. You are listening to Point of View. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
Yes, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-351-1212. Carmen Pate with me. We're talking with Robert Knight for a little bit longer about hate crime legislation. And again, we've given you information about that. We certainly do encourage you to contact your member of Congress. Upper right-hand corner, it says Protect Religious Freedom, Oppose Hate Crimes Legislation. You click through that, we give you a little bit of a background. On Wednesday, April 22nd, the House Judiciary Committee is scheduled to mark up the law, Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009. And then, of course, we talked about it going to the floor. And so if you want to actually express your opinion, we have a suggested letter, and you can make changes on that any way you would like. All you need to do is know your zip code. And if you do, then we let you know who your representative is. We then allow you to click through that, and it takes a very short amount of time. And, Carmen, I found a lot of people come up and say, I've never written a letter to my member of Congress, but you've made it so easy. Within 2 or 3 minutes, I can express my opinion to a member of Congress. So we've made it easy for you, encourage you to do so. Why are we talking about it? Well, tomorrow is the actual discussion, debate, and markup for the bill, which will eventually be voted on in the House of Representatives, go to the Senate, and of course, if it does reach the desk of President Barack Obama, he said he will indeed sign it.
Well, and now again, we remove the excuses, so if you've been wanting to contact your Congress, didn't know how to do it, we've made it very, very simple. Hope you'll do that. You know, Robert, one of the things that you've pointed out in an article that you've written, we've posted it on our website today, federal hate crime law would imperil civil rights. You talk about the statistics, and you said in October of 2008, the U.S. Department of Justice Department for 2007, nearly 80% of hate crimes listed in crimes against persons involved intimidation. That was 47.4%. Or simple assault, 31%, which would involve nothing more than words. So bottom line, you're saying the proposed law, in effect, would make federal cases out of name-calling. And when we, from the Word of God, say that homosexuality, that behavior is a sin, that would be considered name-calling, wouldn't it?
It could be. And it's a very short trip to assault and intimidation from just expressing an opinion that someone may not like. Matt Barber has a wonderful column up today. He works with Liberty Counsel, and he's an attorney, and he talks about how it could come about that you're just ministering to somebody who's caught up in homosexuality, and you can have a hate crime. He says, for example, if a group of Christians are at a gay pride parade, and one of them gently places his hand on a homosexual's shoulder and shares that there's freedom from homosexuality through a relationship with Jesus Christ, then voila, we have a battery and consequently a felony hate crime. You don't have to have actual violence or injury for a hate crime to occur, even though this bill talks about violent crimes only. But in practice, battery can have a very expansive definition. Here's something else Matt mentions. If the homosexual merely claims he was subjectively placed in apprehension of bodily injury by the Christian's words, then again, the Christian can be thrown in prison for a felony hate crime. The FBI includes mere words, insults and intimidation in calculating hate crimes, as you pointed out, Carmen. And under the current political regime in Washington, there's every reason to believe they'll be subjectively considering insults and intimidation for purposes of prosecuting hate crimes, quote unquote. Very dangerous, giving prosecutors this kind of tool.
Let's take on one more in this particular bill we're talking about here. It broadly defines intimidation. Now, some have looked at this and said that even a pastor's sermon could be considered hate speech under this legislation, meaning if somebody just preached on Romans 1 and then somebody went out there and maybe did something that was wrong, that person certainly deserves to be punished, but the pastor could be punished as well. Now, for people that, Robert, think that this could never happen, can I use the name Aki Green as an illustration?
Yes. He was the Swedish pastor who gave a sermon about homosexuality. He used biblical quotes. He gave the biblical view of sexuality and homosexuality. And prosecutors in Sweden had him arrested and charged him with a hate crime. And, you know, he had not left his pulpit. He was in his church talking about what the Bible says. And he was finally acquitted, not through Swedish law, but because Sweden appealed to the International Tribunal of Human Rights, which gives religious freedom. So he ducked a bullet. But, you know, this shows what prosecutors are willing to do if they're politically motivated to promote the gay agenda. One other thing Matt includes in his column is a mention that Representative Arthur Davis of Alabama admitted that the current legislation could be used to prosecute pastors under the concept of inducement to violence. And that's what you're talking about, Kirby.
Yes. Right.
Blaming, saying, hey, he got me worked up, so I hit somebody over the head. You know, if you really think about this for a minute, what if the pastor gives a sermon against prostitution? Does that mean if some poor prostitute gets beaten up somewhere that it's the pastor's fault? What if he says that abusing alcohol is not a good idea? And then some violence, you know, some drunk is beaten up. I mean, you could go all sorts of places with this.
You really could.
But those crimes don't have lobbies that are active like the gay political movement, which is seeking to criminalize Christianity by putting laws like this into place.
We have some listeners who want to join the discussion. Andy's calling from Arkansas. You're on the air with Robert Knight.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good, Andy. Thank you.
Well, I was just calling. I'm a pastor of a medium-sized church in Arkansas, and boy, we really have a detachment from everything that's going on in Washington, the legislation, just everything that's happening there. It seems as though we're so detached that we don't know what's going on, and the fear is that one of these days there's going to be these certain laws or certain legislation passed that we're not going to know about it, and we're still going to be preaching from the pulpit the Word of God, and we're going to end up in jail. It's really, really something that we should think about more often. And I appreciate you guys going on the air today and letting everyone know.
Well, Andy, I appreciate that, because my reaction that I get from a lot of pastors is, we just need to preach the gospel. I mean, we just don't need to get involved in these kind of social political issues. And I keep saying to my fellow pastors that are convinced that we really don't ever need to exercise our citizenship responsibilities, is that even if you don't think it's important to be a good citizen, you, just from self-interest, should be a little bit concerned about the fact that some of these laws could affect you in very dramatic ways. And if you don't think so, just look overseas at what has happened when some of these kinds of bills and legislation have been implemented, how that has really prevented the advancement of the gospel. Now, God is going to work through his people no matter whether there's persecution or not.
Definitely.
But if we have the right to vote, mm-hmm. and we have the right to express our opinion, and we keep silent, I think we've missed an opportunity to be salt and light.
Right. I think it's beginning to actually happen because, you know, before I counsel with someone, which I should have the right to access and the right of initiative with someone that I counsel with, but now they have to sign a 4-to-5-page form, you know, acknowledging that everything I say might not be exactly what they want to hear. And that's something that is just new to Arkansas that I have to be careful about. I can't even call myself a counselor. I have to call myself a biblical encourager, if you will. And
sure.
There's just a lot of things that we have to be careful of. But I appreciate you guys, and we'll keep listening.
Well, appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
Robert, it seems to me that he represents the feeling of many pastors who simply wonder if the laws would change in such a way that it would really constrain what they were able to do from the pulpit and how they would even be able to minister.
Well, I think that they found that out of New Jersey, the Methodist Church in Asbury Park. I think it was Asbury Park. We were just writing about this earlier. It was the pavilion, the oceanfront pavilion, where they have weddings. And a lesbian couple wanted to be married in the pavilion that the Methodist Church operates. And the Methodist Church said, well, we can't do that. We believe marriage is for a man and a woman, and we don't want to aid and abet something the Bible tells us is wrong. So the state moved in using the sexual orientation law and stripped them of their tax exemption for that property. I mean, that's where we're headed. And, you know, if pastors don't speak out, and I'll bet you that Methodist church probably didn't oppose that sexual orientation law when it was put on the books in New Jersey, and then they found out the hard way that it has teeth in it, and they're coming after them. And that's what's happening all over the country. Slowly, inexorably, as these laws get put into place, you'll find people curbing what they say, what they do, and being frightened just to speak the truth.
Well, again, we've talked on this program before about various ways in which other kinds of laws have affected the church. I mean, pastors have been sued for clergy malpractice. Church bodies, elders and pastors have been sued because of, quote, invasion of privacy, so-called scarlet letter lawsuits, mm-hmm. because they exercise church discipline. Does it not make sense that this kind of legislation could affect pastors and churches as well? If you want to express your opinion about that, on air, 1-800-351-1212. The second hour, we'll have a different guest, but we'll continue taking calls on that. But also, if you want to express your opinion to your member of Congress, visit our website, pointofview.net. In the upper right-hand corner, we give you an opportunity to express your opinion. We'll come back and take some more of those opinions right after this.
Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
1-800-351-1212. Carmen Pate, I'm Kirby Anderson. Robert Knight with us for a few more minutes. Senior writer with Coral Ridge Ministries, also senior fellow with the American Civil Rights Union, ACRU. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you.
Connie's on the air listening to WBCH in Pennsylvania. Hey, Connie, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. How are you guys?
Good.
Good. I'm so glad you had this program on today. I'm outside doing yard work, and I came in. I said, Lord, what are they talking about today? I'm so glad you're talking about this. First of all, I hope you. I know you're going to agree with me. I admire this young woman so much for the courage she had to speak what she believed. She didn't mention she was a Christian, but I do believe she is.
Yeah, Miss California.
Pardon?
Yeah, Miss California, Carrie Brejean.
Yeah,
yeah.
And she was on the Today Show, Roy, this morning, and she said she wasn't going to take back what she said, and I just admire her, and she's been on my heart, and hopefully all you all Christians are really pray for her and her family, for the Lord to protect her, because I don't know why last night I kept thinking about what happened with Anita Bryant years ago.
Oh, yes.
And I don't know why, I just feel that she, after all the insults this person is making about her, and only this morning on the radio they played a soundbite of this gentleman, I use the word loosely, that was one of the judges.
Perez Hilton.
She would have won the crown, she would have won. He would have went ran on the stage and ripped the crown right off her head.
There you go.
I mean,
Robert
know,
Knight,
I mean,
that's just the point you were making, isn't it?
I just can't believe what has happened. You know, I know you have a guest. I heard something on Christian radio last week, something about a bill called 300, where transvestites, and they're going to be able to come in the ladies' room, and it's going to be accepted. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Robert,
I mean,
go ahead.
I just couldn't believe what I heard. It was on Focus on the Family, Dr. Dobson's show, and he was saying that for the legislators to vote against this bill. I mean, we're as Christians, what do? I know we have to pray, but I cannot believe how far this has gone.
Mm-hmm. Robert, let's give you a chance to jump in here.
Yeah, you're probably talking about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is the gay jobs bill, we call it. It's a federal bill that would force all employers to accommodate every sexual orientation, and they've added gender identity to it. So that's what you're talking about. The employers would have to let men dressed as women go into the ladies' rooms. Can't make any sexual distinctions at all. It's very radical. But we've seen this even on the state level. And in Montgomery County, Maryland, they had a local ordinance to this effect. And the parents really got upset, and they were worried about swimming pools and, you know, places where guys could just go in if they and it's all in your head, by the way. I mean, the biological sex has nothing to do with it. It's, if a guy feels like he's a woman that day, he can go into a woman's room because he feels that orientation that day. I mean, it's absurd. And yet the county thumbed its nose at all these parents, and the law stands. So, you know, you got to accompany your child to the restroom because you never know what you're going to find.
You just cannot make some of this stuff up.
And, you really can't.
Carmen, a lot of our listeners say, I can't believe this is happening. Having grown up in the San Francisco Bay Area and having at least some contact peripherally, because I had a family member who was a homosexual with a gay community, I saw some of this coming. And the sad reality is that what has been routine in certain other countries of the world and even certain areas of our country is now coming to Main Street America.
Well, it is. And Bob Knight, as you know, we've been talking about this issue for years and years and trying to warn the American people that this was happening. And what breaks my heart is that we know that a person who is in a homosexual lifestyle who desires to change can change with the help of Jesus Christ. And we know that there are ministries out there, there are counselors out there who want to help them. And Robert, this would stop those counseling programs. This would, I think, of Exodus and the impact that this would have on the amazing work of Exodus International.
Yeah, Exodus has actually had people go to Capitol Hill to lobby against the bill. Not because they're for hate crimes, they're against any violence, but because they see the writing on the wall that if you misconstrue being opposed to homosexuality or saying that people can change, one day their ministries will be shut down as hate exercises. That's certainly how they're treated by gay activists. And if you don't believe it, the guy that our caller was talking about, Perez Hilton, the judge at the Miss USA pageant who so abused Miss California, was at it again on MSNBC, and he accused her of dragging her religion into it, even though she did not. She just answered the question in a straightforward manner. And then he went off and said, you know, there's no place for religion, you know, in the public. It's Jesus, 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 and this is very offensive to atheists and Muslims and so forth. He went on about how offended he was. And I'm thinking, this guy has a complex. Because not only did she not mention religion, he's the one who keeps bringing these things up and then accusing her of doing it. He's doing what a lot of gay activists do, which is to extrapolate their rage and, frankly, their hatred onto people who disagree with them.
Let's take some more phone calls. We'll go to Virginia this time, listening on WTRM. Bill, thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the program. I just had a point of clarification earlier in the show, and I apologize because I did not hear the whole show, but you were talking about the many genders that are mentioned in the DSM.
Orientations, yes. Okay.
Orientations, yes.
Or gender identity.
Actually, fortunately, right now, those are still considered disorders. That's
right.
Why they're in the DSM. Unfortunately, in the new one, they have taken out homosexuality, so maybe the trend is going to...
Well, and I think you made the good point, because, Bob, Robert, I want to get your comments as well. There was a time in which homosexuality was considered a disorder. Now you have, 30 of those disorders that are still in the DSM, but we've seen that sometimes if you get enough political action at the American Psychiatric Association or even the American Psychological Association, Robert, don't we see some of those definitions change and some of those disorders removed?
Yeah, they actually don't call them orientations in the DSM. They call them paraphilias, which means they're an abnormal form of sexuality, and there are more than 30 of them. And here's the thing, though, that's very unnerving, and that is that there's a movement within the psychiatric profession and within the DSM to reclassify even some of those if the perpetrator is not conflicted by his own behavior. And pedophilia is one of those paraphilias. And so you have the situation where if a guy feels terribly guilty over what he's done, he's the guy who has a disorder. But if somebody is perfectly satisfied with himself, feels no guilt or remorse, he's not considered disordered. So the disorder only comes in when there's a conflict, ego dystonic behavior, they call it. That's scary. Think about that for a minute. The National Association of Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, NARTH, which has a lot of great stuff on its website, took that on full force, because you have credentialed psychiatrists and psychologists there who challenged that the DSM for starting to bend the rules and starting to reclassify and open the door to abuses. By saying that if you don't feel bad about it, maybe it isn't so bad.
Robert, just before we let you go, I wanted to mention certainly that you are the senior writer at Coral Ridge Ministries, a ministry we highlight often, but I thought I'd take a minute to talk about the American Civil Rights Union. We have posted today your article that came out a while back, and it is on the website for the American Civil Rights Union, which I would encourage people to go to. It's theacru.org, or, of course, it also is in Town Hall, but real briefly, just before we go to our break, tell us about the American Civil Rights Union and how you're involved.
Well, this organization was formed 10 years ago by Bob Carlson, who was the architect of the Reagan welfare reform program that overhauled welfare and that President Clinton signed in the 90s. And then Bob got Ed Meese on the board, and there are several prominent attorneys, Ken Starr. These are real superstars in the legal profession from a conservative point of view.
Sure.
And the ACRU is sort of the anti-ACLU, because the ACLU keeps attacking our most cherished liberties. And the American Civil Rights Union, on the other hand, goes out and protects groups like the Boy Scouts. ACRU has filed a brief in every Boy Scouts case where they've been challenged as to their right to be in a school or some public place.
Very good.
Susan Carlson runs it. Her husband Bob died 2 years ago, but when I left the Media Research Center's Culture and Media Institute, ACRU contacted me and asked if I wanted to be a senior fellow there. So I said, boy, I like their work, and I've been aboard ever since.
Well, it's great. Wish you very well. I wanted people to know your new home, and it's just great to have you on the program, and look forward to the next time.
Okay, thanks so much for having me on, Carmen and Kirby.
Thank you.
Robert Knight, let me just mention, just before we go to a break, that if you want to express your opinion to a member of Congress, your congressman, again, go to our website, pointofview.net. Click on the button that says Protect Religious Freedom, Oppose Hate Crimes Legislation. If you know your zip code, then you'll know who your representative is, and we've made it very easy for you to contact them. We'll take a break and come back with another expert on this issue right after these important messages.
Across the nation, this is Point of View. For materials offered during the broadcast, please write to Point of View, Post Office Box 30. That's Box 30, Dallas, Texas, 75221, ZIP 75221. Or call our toll-free number, 1-800-347-5151. Point of View will continue after this. Point of View is produced by Point of View Ministries and is supported by your generous tax-deductible contributions. Across America, live, this is Point of View.
Second hour today as we talk about hate crimes legislation. And again, if we are encouraging you to take some action, if you go to our website, pointofview.net, upper right-hand corner, Protect Religious Freedom, Oppose Hate Crimes Legislation, we encourage you to take some action on that. If you're just joining us, in the first hour we talked with Robert Knight for a little bit about this. Our next guest is going to help us understand a little bit of the history, what's been happening around the world. Carmen Pate with me. And Carmen, let's do the honors and introduce our guest, who's been on the program before, but it's been a few years.
It has. The Reverend Ted Pike. He's the director of the National Prayer Network, a Christian conservative watchdog organization. He has appeared nationally on radio and television, educating the public concerning the danger to free speech posed by anti-hate laws. Reverend Pike's outreach is largely responsible for international publicity concerning the arrest and the imprisonment of 11 Christians in Philadelphia in October of 2004. If you recall, they were threatened with 47 years in prison for the hate crime of publicly witnessing to homosexuals. Reverend Ted Pike, welcome to Point of View.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we are appreciative of your good work. And one of the things that you were celebrating yesterday when we talked is the fact that Representative John Conyers has agreed to hold a hearing, which I understand is actually going to be televised tomorrow. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. It's going to be televised on the Judiciary website. And that's judiciary.house.gov. Go at 10:15 tomorrow morning Eastern Standard Time, and you can watch this hearing, which we really had to pry out of Conyers. We got advanced information from homosexual leaders that there would be no hearings on the federal hate crimes bill. And I consider this legislation the most dangerous legislation that's ever come before the U.S. Congress. But Conyers was trying to shoot that through deceptively, get it actually passed out of Judiciary by the end of this week and passed by the House of Representatives next week. But we were able to get the inside information on that and alerted people everywhere, and we had what was called a ton of calls. Both Democrats and Republicans said a ton of calls were coming in just as soon as Congress reconvened yesterday morning. At 10 o'clock yesterday morning, Conyers buckled. He submitted to the will of the people, and he is going to have one hearing. Now, we should have an awful lot more hearings than that because, as I say, this legislation is so dangerous. But he's going to have one hearing again. That's at 10:15 Eastern Standard Time. All America should be listening.
Ted, you know, we are focusing our time and attention on this, and we were talking about it last week. We're giving a lot of attention to it today. Are you disappointed at all that when you even watch some of the more conservative programs or listen to some of the conservative talk shows that today they're talking about issues other than this issue of hate crime legislation?
Yes, I've never seen anything like it in my life. I've been fighting this federal hate crimes bill since 1998, and we've always had a certain rise among the conservative right just as soon as they know that hate bill is in Congress. It's actually been introduced at least five times since 1998, and we've been able to defeat it all five times. But for some strange reason, there's been a three-month total blackout practically of any real information about these hate bills, which were introduced on January 8th. And as soon as I got that information from Jackson Lee's office, I went on the Internet and spread it all over the Internet. But I have been, it's been like pulling teeth to get the big new right organizations to get on board, and I still remain baffled.
Well, you know, when you consider what's taken place even around the world where hate laws have been implemented, it should be a wake-up call for us here in America. And we've posted an article from your website, which we'll link back to your website. It's called Anti-Hate Laws Will Make You a Criminal. And in that article, Ted, you list what things that have taken place literally around the world.
Yes, you know, that article was actually written in 1988 when I first entered this hate bill fight. I became aware that the Anti-Defamation League, which is the architect of this legislation worldwide, was holding a big national conference at Hofstra University in New York, and they were charting out a model anti-hate law for America. And out of the Hofstra conference in 1988, and then they then radiated out throughout our 50 states, and they persuaded 45 U.S. states to adopt some version of their model anti-hate law. But the big apple at the top of the tree is their federal anti-hate law, which they've been trying to get through since 1998. What it will do is give vast federal powers instantaneously from Washington, D.C., from a hate crimes command center there to indict, to prosecute, to imprison Christians, dissenters, free speakers, even critics of groups like Islam and so on, all around the United States at the same time. You see, the problem has been that there was a hate crimes law passed by Congress in 1969, but it didn't have any teeth to it because there were so many laws guarding states' rights, privileges, I should say, coming from the Constitution, guarding police rights to enforce law enforcement on the local level. But what this legislation wants to do is break down all of those state barriers to federal intrusion. The bill is called the Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act. It's an attempt by the government to get into law enforcement on the local level big time, to completely override states' rights in law enforcement, to come down anytime the federal government wants to come down. It can intervene and prosecute not only violent crimes, violent hate crimes, not only nonviolent property-oriented hate crimes, but also all felonies in the United States that have nothing to do with bias crimes. This is a massive federal takeover of law enforcement nationally. Now, when you have federal policing powers linked together without barriers to local policing powers, that is the very definition of a police state.
Talking with Reverend Ted Pike. And Ted, for just a minute, you're a pastor in the state of Oregon. I know we have a number of pastors who listen, even seminary students and all of the like. What would you say to them who might just think that this is an issue of criminal justice and it really doesn't have an impact for what you might do from the pulpit?
Well, the record, just go to our northern neighbor, Canada. In 1971, ADL, after 10 years of lobbying, persuaded the Parliament to pass their federal hate crimes bill. They said, oh, no, this is just a very benign, innocent effort to bring justice and federal control and enforcement against violent hate crimes in the provinces, against violent hate inciting speech in the provinces. And just like happened a couple of weeks ago, as Parliament was disbanding, going home for the Christmas vacation, they were able to push that bill through. It's Section 319 now makes it a federal hate crime to criticize homosexuality in Canada in any way. If a pastor, if a talk show host, even a person on the street corner publicly criticizes homosexuality in Canada, that means the talk show host will be facing a minimum $5,000 fine. If he repeats that offense in public, it means contempt of court and prison. And certainly the radio station who allowed him to make such a hate speech.
Let me jump in. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about that right after this.
Listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Carmen Pate, I'm Kirby Anderson. Reverend Ted Pike with us. He is with the National Director and is the National Director of the National Prayer Network. We have information about him on our website. Again, encouraging you to take some action. But if you'd like to join us, 1-800-351-1212.
Charles in Texas, you're on the air with Reverend Ted Pike.
Hey, how you guys doing over there?
Great. Thanks for calling us.
You know, I'm really just listening. I'm in awe about a lot of things, what I'm hearing, even when the young man from Arkansas was sharing about how he almost got to sign a whole docket before he went to even minister to a man or woman about homosexuality.
Yeah.
And the process of even going out and witnessing the word in a public place, of just laying your hands on someone and just really talking about conversion and coming over to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That you can even be in prison for that. And that's like putting a muzzle on the pulpit itself in the church, so if it's outside the church, how far would it go inside the church is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
serious.
I think it is. And we've talked about before, Ted, the issue of other kinds of laws, not related to these. But, you know, you've had laws that have been used to prosecute pastors for clergy malpractice. There have been laws that have been used to prosecute churches and church boards that have exercised church discipline. So I don't think it's much of a stretch at all, especially in light of what has happened in Europe, what has happened in Canada, to see that these laws could be used against pastors in the pulpit, couldn't they?
Well, absolutely. You see, this federal hate crimes bill is based upon a hate law that was actually passed by Congress back at the height of the civil rights period in 1969. And Title 18, Section 2A, says that if anyone abets the commission of a hate crime, let's say an attack upon a homosexual, then that person who abets that will be tried as a principal. Now, if you go to Webster's Dictionary, abets means also means incite. So if a pastor is on the radio and he is turning up the temperature against Sodom and Gomorrah and homosexuality, calling it an abomination, and some unstable person hears him inciting hatred or anger or wrath against homosexuals and goes out and commits an attack on a homosexual, and he says, well, Reverend so-and-so told me on the Christian radio that God killed thousands of homosexuals in Sodom and Gomorrah, so I'm doing the will of God. Then, you see, according to the original 1969 hate law, he is guilty of inciting. It's a very small stretch to say he incited this skinhead or KKK fanatic to commit a violent hate crime. And so what this means is there is a very, very small stretch between this bill, this Conyers bill now going onto the books, to actual indictments, actual arrests and indictments of those who are inciting violent hate crimes. And by the way, we do have legislation that's probably going to be coming through very soon out of the Homeland Security Department, especially the Senate Homeland Security Committee. It's called the Violent Terrorism and Radicalization Bill. And, boy, I tell you, they are wanting to put a noose around all Christians, all pro-lifers, all critics of homosexuality. They're wanting to put us all together, putting a big noose around it and tighten it up with these federal laws which are coming through. And so it is so vital that literally that all good men and women right now be specializing and concentrating on the legislative draconian laws that are coming down the pipeline in Congress.
I know the Alliance Defense Fund says that currently every state has laws that prohibit conspiracy to commit a crime. And they go on to say that when you linked to hate crimes, preaching or teaching against homosexual conduct could be prosecuted as conspiracy to commit a hate crime. And so if a pastor preaches from Genesis 19 or Romans 1 referencing the homosexual agenda or the lifestyle could be heard by someone who committed a crime, not only would the offender be prosecuted, but the pastor would as well. And so it just shows you how it would happen, the process that would take place. And if people think that it's just not going to happen here in America, it appears to me that we're headed down that road, Ted.
Well, it's already happening. HB 777 was signed by Governor Schwarzenegger in California. Do you realize that right now anyone, any public school student, any teacher, any administrator in the state of California who criticizes homosexuality on school property or maybe not even on school property will the administrators and the teachers will lose their job, the child will be expelled, and the parents, who knows, but those active offenders will be subject to lawsuits and on and on. And so this is a Pandora's box. We have got to keep the lid, especially on federal hate crimes laws. These local laws, like in Philadelphia in 2004, California on January 1st of this year, laws are coming in on the local level, but they're not as effective as a huge federal hate crimes law. And as I say, I remind our listeners, tomorrow morning at 10:15 on the Judiciary website, you can hear the hearings, and I'm sure we'll have at least several feisty Republicans there. Gohmert, Chaffetz, and others will be standing up saying, look what's happening in Canada, Europe, Australia. My heavens, we can't let a law with as sordid a record of taking away free speech as this be enacted and enshrined as national policy.
We had Representative Louis Gohmert in studio last Monday talking about this issue. You might want to listen to that interview as well. Of course, he'll be dealing with that tomorrow, perhaps, in the testimony. One of the topics we dealt with briefly in the first hour was the Miss USA beauty pageant and some of the comments by Miss California. Our next caller would like to address that, listening on KBJS in Texas. Brenda, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wondered why we're not holding this gentleman, if you want to call him that, more accountable for bringing his personal agenda to public competition like that. I don't understand why he's not being barred from being any kind of a judge again in a competition like this.
I think that's probably a given, but I suspect there'll be a few people talking about Perez Hilton in the next day or two. If not, we will, because I think that her answer was certainly not confrontational at all. And she said that in my country and my family, I believe marriage should be between a man and a woman. And then even added, no offense to anyone out there. I mean, she went out of her way to try to not be offensive. He went out of his way to be offensive every time he said something in his blog or said something on the air. And it just seems to me that people should be held accountable. So I'm ready to hold him accountable. How about you?
I agree totally. And I understand that there was already a rally that was planned and scheduled for immediately after the competition, and when she left, and I thought this had to be premeditated.
Oh, you knew they were setting that up, don't you?
They were setting it up, yes,
yeah.
Sir. And I just think he needs to be held publicly accountable to that. And I admire this young lady. Like you said, she went out of her way not to intimidate anyone or be judgmental. She just said how she was raised and what her beliefs are, and I admire her for that.
Plus, she hasn't backed down after, you know, he criticized her. She hasn't backed down at all, and so I do applaud her for that as well.
I agree. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Ted, we were talking about that briefly before, but it just is an illustration, again, of the level of hostility. One of our callers wondered if Miss California Carrie Prejean would end up being the next Anita Bryant of the 21st century, because for those of us a little bit older, remember how Anita Bryant became vilified very quickly because of some of her stands on issues like that.
Well, you know, once you have a federal law as a kind of a blanket over the country, it casts a chill on free speech. As I mentioned earlier, these laws are so ambiguous that nobody knows whether you're safe or not. Is what you're saying politically correct, or is it hate speech? The lines are very blurred because bias motivation, intimidation, all of this language is extremely difficult to define. I mean, only God really knows what our motivations are. But once you have a very nebulous, unclear federal law which does not have the checks and balances built into it that our traditional English law has, then everybody walks on pins and needles because the fear that they might have committed a speech crime, a thought crime, a hate crime against some federally protected group.
Ted, just before we let you go, we've put a link up to your website. We have your bio there so people can go to your National Prayer Network. It's real simple. It's truthtellers.org, and we would encourage people to go read a little bit more. We have some of your articles posted there that people can use to link back to your website as well if they're traveling, don't have a chance to write that down right now. But appreciate you standing strong on this issue for many years. I certainly have benefited greatly from the material that you've put together, and we'll see how it plays out tomorrow in the very important committee that is going to be addressing this issue.
Well, thank you so much, Kirby and Carmen.
Thank you.
In House Judiciary Committee, considering that tomorrow, if you want to express your opinion about that to your member of Congress, Carmen, we've made it pretty easy. All you have to do is click on that button on the upper right-hand corner at pointofview.net.
That's right. If you know your zip code, just enter that, and it'll tell you who your congressmen are. And we also give you a sample email that you can send if you don't want to create your own, or you're welcome to do that as well. But it's made very user-friendly. Please check it out and let your voice be heard on this issue.
One of the things that we've talked about even in this hour as we talked with Ted Pike is that terms like intimidation, terms like sexual orientation, somewhat vague, easily misinterpreted, easily used or in one way or another that could have a very significant impact on free speech as well as religious speech. So we are encouraging you, if you have always wanted to express your opinion on this, we've made it about as simple as possible. Just simply visit our website, pointofview.net, click on those buttons, and if you know your zip code, everything else you need to know is right there. We'll come back and take a full bank of phone calls. Stay with us. We'll talk to you about these issues right after these messages.
You are listening to Point of View. For materials offered during the program, please write to Point of View, Post Office Box 30. That's Box 30, Dallas, Texas 75221, zip 75221. Or call our toll-free number, 1-800-347-5151. That's 1-800-347-5151. opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. Point of View will continue after this. Listening to Point of View. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again is Kirby Anderson.
Final half hour, Carmen Pei with me as well. An open line for you to express your opinion about hate crime legislation. We recognize there are other issues taking place. We'll get to those throughout the week. This is certainly a week in which environmental legislation, cap and trade, is going to be focused on as well. But we chose to focus on this for a couple of reasons. First of all, we think this may be the greatest threat of anything we're looking at down the road to churches, to pastors and individuals. Second of all, we have been disturbed that very few people have been covering this issue of hate crime legislation. Perhaps it's because it's been defeated five times before, but the reality is this time it's a very different Congress.
Yes, it is.
And frankly, the only reason hate crime was not passed last time is Congress sort of gave up because they recognized it would be vetoed by President George W. Bush. There's every reason to believe that President Barack Obama will sign this. So this is why we felt that this was an important issue today. By looking at my screen here of all the calls coming in, I think you probably agree with this as well. If you're just joining us, we're also encouraging you to take action. Visit our website, pointofview.net, and you will see a place where you can express your opinion to your member of Congress. But we'd like to get your opinion on air, so this last half hour, I'm giving you a national forum to express your opinion on these issues.
Let's go out to North Carolina. Yuri, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I don't know, just to say here, if they take our freedom of speech as Christians, I will only be so lucky to get arrested for that. So, you know, it's just defending my beliefs as a Christian. My reward in heaven will be great. That's basically my belief. But it's amazing to me how many people is out there just apologizing for our beliefs as Christians, and they have groups just attacking our beliefs. But at the same time, if we dare to say something about what we believe, for example, in this case, homosexuality, everybody makes a big issue about it. I just don't understand why are we failing as Christians to band together and try to stop this. That's basically my comment.
Well, and certainly one mechanism by which to do that is certainly through talk radio. And we are now on, what is it, 400 different radio outlets in about 43 states. I just saw that we're going to pick up another station that will be in a different state. It'll be 44 states. You have other venues like that as well. Focus on the Family certainly fits into that category and others. But it's important to understand that we need to stand together on these important issues. And individually, we should not be intimidated. There are believers all over the world that suffer much more persecution than Christians could ever imagine.
Yes.
And so that's not a reason for us to be quiet. But at the same time, I think some people say, well, if that comes, that's just, you know, part of the end times or the Antichrist. No, I mean, God has held us responsible for what we do. And we have a citizenship in heaven, but we also have a citizenship here on earth. And sometimes we can be so heavenly minded, we're no earthly good. We can be so super spiritual that we don't understand that we do have a responsibility to be God's ambassadors. And when God has given us the privilege here of not only voting for members of Congress, but also being able to express our opinion to them, then that's reason enough. Now, there is usually excuses, and we, I think today, have eliminated most of them with our opportunity. If you know your zip code, that's really all you need to know to click on that website that we have here, pointofview.net on the upper right-hand corner. And then if you don't know what to write, we give you a sample. If you have some things you want to write, you can write that as well. And within a click of a button, it will send an email, and at least you've expressed your opinion about a piece of legislation that's going to be considered tomorrow before the House Judiciary and Representative Conyers' bill is going to be first considered. There's going to be a hearing. There's going to be a markup. There's going to be a vote. And if you sit back after all of that and don't do anything, then it's a little too late to start complaining about those issues.
Yes, yes, and I think, too, Kirby, I think it's important to remind our listeners that it doesn't mean that we are in favor of hate crimes. Certainly, we already believe that there are laws in place to go after those perpetrators of crimes that cause harm to anyone, any individual. It also doesn't mean that we don't love homosexuals. We know that there is a way for those individuals to change, simply because there are thousands of individuals who were homosexuals who no longer are. And when there is hope for change, we should be given every opportunity to tell them about that hope. And this legislation could silence those who simply want to help those people find freedom.
Let's go back and take some phone calls. 1-800-351-1212 in Nevada, listening on KYCC. Dorothy, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My comment is to those who say they don't have time to even just write a letter to their representative. I suggest that they read a comment that's been attributed to a Catholic priest during World War II. I don't remember exactly the whole statement, but the long and the short of it is they came for the gypsies, and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a gypsy. He goes through several other people groups, and then he says they came for me, and no one was left to speak up.
Well, it's a good point.
Yeah, it only takes a minute to sign up on your program, Point of View, for your newsletters and or American Family Association, and at least sign those petitions that you people put out that you go through all that trouble to do. Our supposed representatives are very busy writing as many laws as it seems possible against Christians in particular. We have to stand up.
Well, I appreciate those comments.
One of
the things that we're encouraging you to do is actually have this email go out. It's not a petition, because we recognize sometimes petitions are perceived as, well, people didn't give a lot of thought to it. So we really have a place there where you can even add your own thoughts. So a specific letter, phone call, email are very significant. The problem with letters these days, as we well know, is ever since the anthrax scare, the letters don't go to Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm.
They have to go to a place where they can make sure that there aren't any toxic substances and things like that. So that kind of narrows it down very quickly to, if you want to write a letter, then fax it, because that'll work. Send an email or make a phone call. And a lot of us are so busy that even thinking about picking up a phone and talking to the representative's assistant is a little bit troublesome or difficult, or maybe even seems a little bit intimidating, although it isn't. But we've tried to make it as easy as possible. All you have to do is type out that email, hit send, and it goes, and you've had an opportunity to at least express your opinion on the issue.
And you know, Kirby, we've had so many legislators on this program who tell us how effective that is, how important it is for them to hear from their constituents on the issues. So please take that moment as was recommended by our listener. And
do you think it's possible that any of the gay activists are encouraging any of their members to write to Representative John Conyers or any of those members of Congress? What do you think?
Don't you know? And you know they have one of the most powerful lobbies in Washington, D.C. They are not only writing letters and sending emails. They are up there every day talking to their legislators. No doubt they're also visiting town hall meetings when those legislators are home. So we just need to kind of step up the ante and do the same thing, and even in a more powerful way, and with a voice of truth.
You used to be the president of Concerned Women for America, and you would actually go to those legislators. Most of us don't live in Washington, D.C. Do letters make a difference? Phone calls make a difference?
Oh, they do. I mean, we have seen legislation change because of those calls and letters. We have been able to present new ideas that they'd never even thought about through emails and letters. And so, please, this is your right, as a citizen of the United States, to have your voice heard. They work for you, so let them know how you feel.
Let's go to Mississippi this time. We're talking to Christy, listening on WPAS. And, Christy, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, but more than that, thank you for bringing up this important topic and really trying to inform Christians out there that this is not a day to be asleep. This is a day to be awake. You know, this hate crimes legislation, as you pointed out, has been threatened to be passed before. And George Bush, and also we had a little better odds in the Congress with more conservatives in there, you know, it wasn't passed before. But I've been talking about this for over a year. I know you guys have that. Barack Obama clearly stated in his campaign that he supported this legislation, and, of course, that removes the threat of a veto. And so so many Christians, I know they're busy. I know that sometimes they'll say things like, you know, I'm just living out my faith and that's all I can do. But, you know, the scripture tells us to watch. It tells us to be diligent. And, you know, we're supposed to watch and pray. And sometimes we're not paying attention. And so many people are going to be caught off guard by these things. If our voices are silenced, then you can't rally people to stand up. And that's what this legislation eventually can do, is to silence the voice, to even say, hey, people, you need to take a stand against us. And we have an enemy. And that enemy is not any particular person or any movement. It is a spiritual battle. And Christians, if they don't wake up and fight, are going to find out too late that enemy is the enemy of all of us, which is, you know, Satan himself, the powers of the air. We have a spiritual war, and it is to win the hearts and minds of those who otherwise won't hear the gospel. We've got to have the freedom to speak out. And this is a battle against that very opportunity to reach someone for Christ.
Well, I appreciate your comments. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take some more phone calls, 1-800-351-1212. Lots of information that we've posted on our website today, pointofview.net. Take the time to read that. If you want to express your member opinion to your member of Congress, please do so. We'll take a break and take some more phone calls right after this.
Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Karma Bate, I'm Kirby Anderson, 1-800-351-1212. Let's take some phone calls.
Let's go to Arkansas now. Elizabeth, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. First, I need to say I'm Catholic. I consider myself Christian, heterosexual, college-educated, over 60, and I support the hate crime legislation.
Okay. Well, can you give us some justification for why you think that would be a good idea?
Well, I've had a lot of experience being around working here in the state and overseas, and there's a lot of discrimination, a lot of punishing discrimination. I am not a gay lover. I'm not homophile, but I do think they are very much discriminated against and sometimes very much mistreated. Because they're gay.
And, you know, I would agree that there are various groups over the years and various individuals over the years that have been discriminated against, have been harmed, kids that sometimes get bullied, you know, because they're too tall, they're too short, they're too smart, they're geeks or nerds, whatever. I mean, and you see people in the workplace that aren't allowed to do certain things, or their statements made about them, gossip behind their back. I'm just not convinced that hate crime legislation at all, whether it would be for this one that would extend it to sexual orientation or any other, is a good way to deal with those issues. Hate crime legislation tries to get in the mind of an individual. I've always said before, I was against hate crime legislation when it first came out. I'm even more against it because I think it legitimizes sexual orientation issues. But I appreciate you calling in today because you represent maybe a group of individuals that feel we need to do something to stand for people's rights. I just don't think hate crime bill is the way to go about it. But I appreciate you calling in today.
I'm rather conservative, so in so many things. But from my experience of what I have run into and seen, and some of the people I don't even like, but then I don't like some of the heterosexuals either. But, you know, I mean, sometimes people are people. But see, the difference is that I believe they were born that way.
Oh, I appreciate your comment. I would disagree with the fact that we can find a biological basis to homosexuality, but we will come back to that issue in the future. Let's just give a few more a chance to weigh in with their comments. Calling from New Mexico this time. Terry, what's on your mind?
Yes, three quick comments. One, why should it surprise us that this matter is getting worse in this country? Secondly, we are heading for a severe judgment in this country for the ungodly turn of events that are happening. Lastly, let's say this bill is passed, and let's say it truly impacts any and all comments that individuals might make regarding homosexuality. I suggest, based on the facts that I've heard, that there is somewhere in the neighborhood of 40, 50, maybe more, million born-again Christians in this country. Why don't we all, just in mass, start openly and publicly making comments from the pulpit? How about kids in school, young ones? Let's all start publicly making comments. Let's see what the courts will do when all of a sudden they have, you know, 30, 40 million people all of a sudden standing in front of a judge. then let them decide on what kind of a mistake they made.
Very appreciate your call. Let's give a few more a chance to weigh in with their comments in Georgia this time. Jacob, thank you for calling.
Yes, I've listened to a lot of the things that are being said today. I think one of the real reasons we're having a multitude of problems out here is because supposedly our Christians have accepted this thing of change. And history was made when Obama got into office. And even stations like yours embrace history, and they just boast about the first African-American in office. And they didn't talk about the basic things that this man stood for, either for abortion, homosexuality, whatever, abortion to up to 9 months. And we, you know, we sort of, we went off into the carnal world to accept the change of history, the first black man and all of this garbage that was going on. And now we are reaping what we sow. And if Christians don't stand up all over the world and get back to righteousness and holiness, then this thing is not going to go away. We can't just keep saying that, you know, maybe he'll do better. He told you from the beginning he wasn't going to do better. But you got half of the Christian population voted for him.
That's right. I mean, when people say they're surprised by what's happening, I go, surprised by what? I mean,
yeah.
The things that were on Barack Obama, it was Obama 2008 website, within a day after he was in the White House, began to be on the White House website.
That's exactly right.
And it's like, okay, and what part of this did you not see coming, whether it was issues of abortion, homosexuality, whether it was issues of spending, health care, climate change, which we're going to be talking about this week as well. These were all issues which any individual looking at that with a rational mind would recognize that these weren't just campaign promises. These were things that he wanted to implement. And for anybody that thinks, well, candidates don't keep campaign promises, people that vote them into office, people that fund their campaigns, hold them accountable. And it was very easy to see each one of the constituencies, whether it was Planned Parenthood, National Abortion Rights League, GLSEN, Human Rights Campaign, Sierra Club, whatever it might be, on whatever issue we're talking about, was obviously going to hold him accountable. And what I'm seeing over these almost first 100 days is pretty much what we expected this time last year.
Exactly. And so we can't be surprised, but the question is, are we now going to stand in the gap for what we know is right? Let's go now to Texas. Linda's on the air. Hi, Linda.
Hi. God bless you guys. My comment is, I do feel like there should be a law, but I feel like it should be equal to each individual.
Yeah, equal protection for all individuals.
Yeah, I don't think it should be because you're gay, you're white, you're black. I believe the law should be very clear because there are people who do bad things to people.
Always have. Yes, and will be.
I feel like God is always on the weak side. So, and I also feel like the sins of one generation visit the next generation. So it's just time for the Christians to fight. I mean, I see every group of people going to the White House, are picketing and doing great things. I see them having tax tea parties. But when are the saints going to stand for what they go and hear every Sunday?
Well,
when are they going to show that their Bible, their God, is God? When will they lay down all and come forward? Because if they don't, the land is going to be taken from them.
Well, Linda, I appreciate your comments. And, of course, we have coming up this National Day of Prayer. We're going to be talking about that,
yes.
God in the City, some of these various events, which are all very exciting things taking place. But here's a great, concrete, very specific action that you can take. Is it the only one? No, there are so many more. We should certainly be praying for those in authority every single day. We should be praying for those who are in authority over us. That would be our president, our Supreme Court, our two United States senators, our representative, our governor, our state senator, our state representative. But we also should express our opinion about these various issues.
We should, and we need to be educated on the issues. We try to bring experts to the table each and every day here on Point of View on these very important topics. We provide resources from their websites that you can use to educate yourself and to pass along to others. And then we make it very, very easy for you to contact your legislature. If, as Kirby said, if you know your zip code, there's no excuse, because we tell you who your congressmen are. We give you a sample email letter. You can change it or you can send it as it is. But you have an opportunity. If you want more education on the issue, you might want to tune into that judiciary website in the morning at 10:15 Eastern time and learn more from your legislators, including Lee Gohmert, who was here last week, about this very issue. So we give you the tools.
Let me just mention that tomorrow we're going to be talking with David Gibbs, and we're going to be talking about the rights that you have in school. We're also going to talk about the rights you have in the workplace. I think you're going to find that very helpful as well. But one last time, let me mention the website, www.pointofview.net. And this is a way in which you can express your opinion about these issues of hate crime legislation. I want to thank Ron and Kim and Andy for their help. Again, visit the website, Protect Religious Freedom, Oppose Hate Crime Legislation, and it's all available at the website, pointofview.net. That's all for today. Tomorrow we'll have David Gibbs with us talking about some of our rights, our responsibilities. I think you're going to find it very helpful. We're going to spend 2 hours with him on two different books that he has written. So we hope to see you then, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.
Been listening to Point of View. For materials offered on the program, please write to Point of View, Post Office Box 30. That's Box 30, Dallas, Texas 75221, ZIP 75221, or call our toll-free number 1-800-347-5151. That's 1-800-347-5151. Point of View is produced by Point of View Ministries and is supported by your generous tax-deductible contributions.